Hello, Dreamers. This is Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to The Course of Course, episode 42.
It's a brand new year.
It's a brand new year, 2016. We've been doing this since 2014, not exactly 3 years in a row, but we've had our foot in the door every year for the last 3 years, which is pretty big for us. You and your yeehaw. Yeehaw's back in play. All right, so what did you do for New Year's, Stephanie?
New Year's, I stayed home and I did a double of a year in champagne and a year in Burgundy.
These are Netflix documentaries because Stephanie and I are big winos.
We are obsessed about the soil and about the monks and the caverns that they made all this beautiful wines back in the time, and thinking about how in the world of champagne that they used to have wars there every 25 years. They said that there was never a photograph or an image of a female smiling with her sons because they always knew they'd be off to war. And then there was the 100-year war. And I just thought, oh, how this cycle just keeps repeating and repeating and repeating.
This horrible dream that we're in. It's wars and famine. And
the moment of separation from God just relived over and over and over.
It's not good. But what I do like about the concept of wine and the idea of drinking it, Gary Renard talked about in his Jesus lifetime, being good friends with Jesus as Thomas, that Jesus and many of them would drink wine back in the day. So if it's good enough for Jesus, I think it's good enough for us.
It's definitely a good thing.
For New Year's Eve, I kind of spent some time with my special relationship. New Year's Day morning, I really thought about what I want for 2016 and how do I want this to unfold. One of the things I really wanted to do and make a commitment for was inviting the Holy Spirit into my day every day, no matter what, to constantly remember to be in my right mind.
You know what? That lesson 365, that one that's right at the end, that says something about, you know, guide me through every word, through every thought, through every action. It's inviting Holy Spirit from that point of view.
I feel like when I have a thought or I'm complaining or I'm criticizing, that I am now being much better at saying, get in your right mind. Just get in your right mind. Clearly, this isn't.
That's great.
And I think I may have buried the lead because I finished the course.
Yay!
It's very exciting.
The workbook
is done, at least for this incarnation. I'm going to do it again. I feel I could have been a little more thoughtful, sort of in the middle of the year. And I'd like to go back and give it a little more attention.
So will you follow like the DU group who posts them? I'm assuming every year they just start on lesson one.
Yeah, they've already done it. We're on two today.
Oh, okay.
Which I really appreciate. I'm not sure who in the DU group is doing that, but thank you very much.
Marcy?
It could be Marcy. It could be Aussie. It could be a number of people. I don't know. But
sure.
I do appreciate whatever they're doing. They've been great in making sure that that course lesson keeps showing up, even if it's not something that I necessarily am on, that lesson, or it's like, oh yeah, I already know that already. It's nice to keep having those reminders. It's huge help for me.
I agree.
I think that DU discussion group has been phenomenal in... So, and Marcy, I think, has been really great at, I believe that she's reposting some of the lessons from Ken Wapnick. Is that what she's been doing? What I really like is she'll put it in different font colors, which definitely helps me.
Yes.
Yeah, I definitely recognize the pink.
I think they have a database going where different questions come up, or the same questions come up, but they have all the answers, and then they just apply them as people ask them.
But I think it just illustrates like how big and meaningful the course is. There's so much there. I feel like I don't really know the course. When we go to a Gary and Cindy Renard workshop and they're pulling out course references, like, oh, that was in there? Like, I feel like I have a lot more learning to do, certainly with the course proper, the text proper.
Yeah, I'm certainly not done with reading the text.
I find that I've reread the Gary books over and over again because it's a lot easier for me. The course itself, the course text, doesn't lend itself to that kind of storytelling. But I understand how important the words are. The thing about the course is it's so meaningful that sometimes you'll read a passage and have to sit with it for a while.
That's for sure.
Whereas with Gary book, you can keep reading because it's more narrative.
Yeah, I find the textbook, I definitely have to take within and ponder on it for a little bit.
Yeah, that's how I feel. So I understand now why they're saying you should only do one lesson a day. There are times, especially in the beginning, like the first couple of lessons are like, this is a table, it has no meaning. This is a pen.
It's not real.
Right. I get that. It's like, oh, I think I got that before. I don't need to do this again. But I understand why it's important to stop and really kind of ruminate over some of these sayings, because they are meaningful and they're deeper than the words themselves.
Yeah, I feel like it's the undoing the mind part. And that's what the course is about, is undoing the ego, undoing the false world, undoing the wrong mind, and connecting to what is our right mind.
I can say, after doing the workbook and getting a little deeper into the course community, the course text itself, I feel like there is so much more for me to embrace. It's becoming a part of my life in a way that if something occurs, I can at least stop and go, oh yeah, that's not really true. I feel like, and Cindy talked about this, staying above the battlefield. I think I'm doing that a little more now. I'm not great at it, but I definitely feel a little more distanced from some of the drama that I used to get so enraptured by. And that took a while, I gotta say.
But you did. You really worked hard and you fought hard for it.
I fought, that's for sure. Absolutely.
You
fought.
Said, ego, I'm going to put you back in your place and I'm going to tell you who I really am.
You know, for a while I was just cussing the shit out of it. I was like, you can't, how dare you, you mother effer, you know? It's like, okay, you need to stop a little because you're actually saying that to yourself. So let's understand what's really happening here. Because I think it's very easy for course students to see the ego as a big monster. The reality is the ego is part of us. So it's like trying to figure out what that means. I don't necessarily need to be best friends with my ego, but I understand it's part of me, so I can't really distance myself too much from it.
For me, I'm just realizing how intricate the ego is, like how manipulating it is, how I can see in my past different relationships with significant others, how it's used those to manipulate me into thinking a certain way that is not freeing at all. Like that person, that loving person that I think I'm in love with from New York that I haven't talked to now in a couple months. Although, I mean, we have talked a couple times, but he doesn't show up the way I wish that he would, you know, and it's so frustrating. But that is truly a use of the ego to use a special relationship to try and pull me out of my center and think we're separate and he's bad and wrong and making a judgment. So I feel like something I want to work on this year is judgment. Make it mean something. To not allow my mind to spin off analyzing and judging and whatevering the situation is. If I can stop that stuff, the sooner I can stop it, the sooner I can be back with God.
So here's a harsh lesson in that. It's like people don't show up to us the way we really want them to, but the reality is, but we created them to act that way. We created this whole scenario.
But I feel like it's the ego that created that scenario.
And who created the ego?
Well, it is ultimately us, but the ego's goal is to keep us separate. So when we're thinking outside of ourselves as this person's done something, they're not showing up the way I want them to, that's a separation idea.
So I have the same sort of problem with a special relationship where he's not behaving in a certain way that I would like him to, until I start stepping back and going, okay, he's doing exactly what I'm asking him to do, kind of like in a bigger spiritual concept. I don't want to be married. I don't want to have this commitment. And all he's doing is voicing what I don't want. And then I get upset with him for voicing it. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I get that all roads lead to God. No matter what happens in my life, I have created it and I have to own that. It's very easy to say, well, it's just my ego as though it's separate from me. But it's me.
But it's the manipulative part of the ego that's trying to make us separate from our brother, when that's always the opportunity for forgiveness. The true forgiveness lesson is to be like, oh, this person's up in my face. Oh, wait a minute. That's just the ego trying to make them this puppet that's interacting with me this certain way to make me hate them or not like them, when really they are just me and that they're just showing up the way that the ego side has provided. Oh, thank you, ego. I don't need this. I'm giving this to the Holy Spirit.
But when it comes down to special relationships, I think we're so taught or so nurtured into believing that they have to show up in a certain way. And when they don't, either we feel like there's something wrong with us or there's something wrong with them. It's very much like you were talking before about judgment. I was caught in that judgment concept, I guess yesterday, a couple days ago, when I was with my special relationship and he had mentioned something about not wanting to be married or in a committed relationship. And I thought, well, that's exactly how I feel, but how dare he say that to me? You know, like, what? That's horrible. Because we all want our special relationships to say, you're the best I've ever had. I can't imagine anybody else being better than you. I want you so much. Does that ever happen? Probably not.
Oh, yeah. I keep thinking my New York friend's going to show up at my door. I mean, the fantasy part of the ego is
it's off the chain.
Unlimited and so destructive.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, it's a never-ending making meaning machine that's constantly going.
But you know what? It's not just a special relationship romantic-wise, but it's also a work relationship, a boss relationship. Like, why can't they treat me better? I went through this phase where I was reading about leadership and finding areas in which my boss was not a leader because I was so fixated on that. Like, I wanted
to prove,
like, outside validation that I was right and they were wrong. It got me nowhere.
Yeah, just frustrated. Remember, I think I mentioned on the last podcast that my significant work relationship that got me into the course to begin with, I felt had shifted to a holy relationship. Well, something very unusual happened where this person went to our parent company and asked them to give me a bonus for the year, which has never happened in the 19 years I've worked there.
That's fantastic.
Like 19 years later, finally, she's coming out of nowhere and asking for something like that, to me, is a pure outcome of forgiveness.
That's huge. See, I think that's a really good example, a finite example of showing what forgiveness can do. Mm-hmm. It's like you went through kind of like a dark night of the soul with this person. Mm-hmm. There were some tough times, and somehow you were able to figure out how to make it whole, to make it right. And now look at it. Like, I'm not saying that the course did this for you. I have no idea, but
I believe it did.
But it's definitely changed in the 2 years that we've been doing this podcast.
Yeah, but like the relationship has shifted. And that's one thing that the course talks about a lot is the special relationship, how we ebb and flow. We come in and out of each other's lives. There's ups and downs. And in this particular one, this was a significant one, which is why I think I had the opportunity through the course to visit it and understand it, is that the possibility of a holy relationship is the outcome of the special relationship. And that's what the Holy Spirit hopes that we have,
right?
Is that holy relationship part. And that's where the true forgiveness, that's where like the whole salvation happens, is in that one instant, one relationship. Like, I feel like I could go home based on just that one person. And when I think of all the people in my lifetime that I've had some pretty tough stuff with, and they've all been opportunities, and I feel like I've gone through all of them. Wow, this lifetime is, I'm blowing them out.
That's how I feel. Like, I've cleaned the plate.
But the guilt.
Yeah. As Gary Renard say, love holds no grievances. Mm. So it's getting to the point where you can truly love, because it's very easy to get lost ego-wise into petty grievances. They haven't done this, they haven't done that. And it's funny where I'm at work, which is where my, I guess, Achilles heel is, where it's very easy to fall into those petty grievances and have to stop and be like, it's okay. It's okay. Let it go. I have to say this out loud. I have to write it down because it's the only way I can get my ego in check.
That's good.
Especially in a work environment in which ego pretty much has its way. This is not a spiritual kind of crucible in which we are existing in. But when I'm home, it's like so much easier.
Right.
It's like, okay, I can forgive everybody. But forgiving somebody in your space at that moment, mm-hmm. that's the challenge.
I think that's beautiful. I think it's great. Like, whatever tricks we can come up with, like writing things down or speaking to ourselves and self-talking after the moment that something's happened, because clearly these moments are going to happen. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. We're not going to get it always in that moment, but it's like the moment after is when we get it. So when we're away from them and then we can kind of process it and release it and turn it over to the Holy Spirit, whatever way we can do that, I think it's great.
That's why we talked before about being grateful to have this lifetime to work through this stuff. Because if, I don't know, we would pass away tomorrow, we would lose all these opportunities, right?
Right.
And so people were talking about how sad it was that we had a couple celebrity deaths. Natalie Cole passed away and Wayne Rogers from MASH passed away. And people are all sad. And our perspective is like, yay, they woke up. You know, like, good for them. But again, we talked about this last time. It's not like you can go up to somebody and say, how great, isn't that great that these people died? It's just so different from the third dimension dream state that we're in right now. You call it the middle world. Do you mean like after you pass away that you go to some other environs, but you don't yet transcend to God?
That's what I think the course is saying.
So in like Catholic language, we would call it limbo.
I think what I've gotten from the art and in person material is that when we pass, usually we go to this middle space, because most likely we're going to bounce back into a body momentarily, because the pain, the psychological pain, is so hard from the guilt of separating from God that that's easier to do. The ego is like, hey, come over here, buddy. I'll set you up in the next lifetime.
I hope I don't have to deal with that, because frankly, they're going to have to push back down into another body.
Well, that's the beauty of the course, is we've learned now what the ego's up to, and we're undoing that part of the false mind. So when we do pass, I really feel strongly we're not coming back here again.
The only way I think I'd be sort of comfortable coming back is in the same way that Gary and Cindy are coming back.
That I will say yes. Okay. Yeah. Maybe there's one or two. Maybe so.
Yeah. Maybe teachers are, you know, demonstrating walking the talk kind of thing. Doing this whole being lost and trying to figure out who I am stuff. Done, done, done.
I think one thing I've been struggling with over the last week and a half that I've been off is just thinking about my family members and how a couple of my sisters won't talk to anyone in our family, and how they won't talk to themselves, and how there's a little bit of depression or guilt that we're not one big old happy family, and how I've mentioned before that I've kind of let them go, because if they're not going to talk to any of us, then, you know, I can only call them so many times and try and engage them. And if they don't want to pick up, or they do and they're pretty short and silent with me because they really want to hang up, and they do, they hang up on me. You know, like, I'll keep plugging away. I think of myself as the peacemaker. But when that doesn't happen the way I want it to, I just do. I kind of let go. And there's something in me that's still kind of struggling with, I want to heal that mind so that we can be all one. But I also feel like on a bigger level, I'm just looking at the whole Son of God. All of the splits.
The sonship.
The whole bloody thing. We are all healing that mind. That's what I keep focusing on. We're all one. We're not separate.
So we both have had these issues with people in our lives that we have a conflict with, and trying to figure out the best way to deal with it. And so that came up again for me a couple of days ago. I took what this person said to me at heart. It's like, okay, fair enough. I won't talk about it, and I wish you well. But I guess part of me just has no interest in trying to fix anyone or heal them or whatever, because I feel like they're on their own path anyway. And there's a part of me that feels like I can't heal them or fix them, even if I tried. I think everything has to come from ourselves. Mm-hmm. What do we want for ourselves? Do we want to be with God, or do we want to choose something else?
And that's pain and suffering.
Right. And that something else is probably not for our best interests, but our ego is in control. So we end up doing stupid things or thinking things that are not helpful to us, but we can't help it. It's just part of us. It's our ego in control.
But we're recognizing that sooner and can let that stuff go. Whereas we see it in others and we see their pain and suffering and wish that they would be on the same page as us.
Well, I think us as seekers are looking for more clarity. At least I am. When we go to a Gary and Cindy workshop, we're always looking for what interesting nugget we can learn from that. Or others, we just happen to be much more aligned with the Gary and Cindy viewpoint, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certainly open to others. I think the Ken Wapnick stuff is really good, because we didn't meet him, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm not as connected with the material, but doesn't mean it isn't great.
Well, I mean, it's his interpretation of the course, right?
Sure.
So I'm sure it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I just am not familiar with it.
Right. And as Art and Persa had said, that he's the best course teacher.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's something we have to look forward to, because there's so much great material out there and we seek it, but there's only so many hours in the day.
Exactly.
The study. But speaking of teachers, I watched the Yogananda documentary on Netflix called Awake. And there's a couple of things that just really shouted out to me about him and his idea of life. And one of them was when he was in the womb of his mother, he said that occasionally the darkness of the womb would disappear and light would visit me. On one side, he wanted to express himself as a human being, and on the other side, he didn't, because he felt he was spirit. He said, I see behind the scenes, the visible man is a shadow, and as soon as I change my consciousness, I see everything, just as if it were a moving picture.
What I'm amazed by is that he was conscious in the womb. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he was conscious of spirit and the darkness. Like, it was the light and the darkness. But for some reason, he was called back to be in a body to send the message through us.
Just for a frame of reference for our listeners, this is Paramahansa Yogananda.
Thank you.
Yeah, who was a teacher in the United States. He was from India. He came over, in the 40s or 50s?
20s. In the 20s.
So he was here in the 20s, and he toured around the country, and he created the Self-Realization Fellowship.
SRF.
If you're in Los Angeles or in San Diego, actually, there are two kind of centers for that.
There's several here in LA, and somehow across my path as an early 20-something, I was hanging out at the Mother Center and going to meditation there, and some of the spiritual people in my life were guided to him, and they were doing the lessons and things like that. I didn't get as deep into it, even though I felt altered by it. Now I'm beginning to think that maybe I was one of his devotees before, but the first night ever from India in the United States of America, he spoke to 6,000 people in Los Angeles. And then for 7 nights in a row, he sold out the LA Philharmonic. This is in like 1925. He's talking about the science of mind, meditation, and all these beautiful themes. One of the things he said here was, the body is potentially vast and omnipresent. The earth is nothing but a movie to me. It's just like the beam of a motion picture. So is everything, made of shadows and light. That's what we are, lights and shadows of the Lord. Nothing else but that. There's just one purpose. It's to get back to the beam.
That's an enlightened person.
I just was blown away at how much it reminded me of the Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same message. Right. It's just coming through a different teacher.
What, like 55 years earlier?
Helen. Right. Yeah. Another thing he said was, it was most important to create a church within yourself where you are the minister in the temple of your own soul. And that is right where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. Like, now that I'm done with the workbook, how am I going to keep the course alive in my life? And one of the little tricks I'm playing on my ego is 10 minutes for God. I have 10 minutes in my day. I can fit in 10 minutes to sit and be quiet and go within and be with
God. So do you do this in the morning? Or
no.
When do you do it?
Always at night.
At night. Okay. Yeah. So right before you go to sleep? Or
Usually when I get home from work.
Okay. So you take 10 minutes, you sit down.
It's really more like 20 because I always do my forgotten song and the new Lord's Prayer, and I usually read a chapter or something. Mm-hmm. And then I do at least, I put in my earphones so I don't hear from the airplanes and the phones. Mm-hmm. And I also thought it was interesting. I watched the Dalai Lama video, and both Yogananda and the Dalai Lama wanted to retreat from society and just kind of be quiet and simple and go within and just live in the hills. And that's how I feel. I just want to get out of here.
One of the things I love about the Yogananda story is at the end of his life, I think he gave given a talk or a speech or something. He sits down and he just dies. He just releases his body. It was just so gentle and kind and immediate.
Complete. Like done and out.
I've always had a kinship for him. I think you were the one that actually introduced me to him when I was in Virginia Beach. And I don't know if you remember this, that you had a little shrine trifold kind of thing. And I remember looking at it going, what is this? And I started getting a little more into it. And I just became fascinated by his story. I still think Autobiography of a Yogi, which is his autobiography, is the sweetest book I've ever read in my life. I've probably read that 4 times now. I would love to read it again.
They said it was Steve Jobs' favorite book and that he handed it out to anyone who worked at Apple.
I can believe that. I think Steve Jobs deep down was a very spiritual person. I think his ego was always, you know, kind of on the forefront, as we all are, especially when you're in a position where you're a CEO of a company.
Yeah.
In American business, companies are so ego-driven anyway. You really can only succeed in that kind of milieu if you're ego-driven and loud and boisterous. Mm-hmm. And I think he was just kind of feeding into that. Mm-hmm. But deep down on a soul level, I get that he was very spiritual.
Yeah, the creativity that came through him.
Absolutely. But it says something if he, kind of like a big egomaniac, I guess you could say, really felt that his favorite book was Autobiography of a Yogi.
That's crazy.
The first time I read it, I remember putting it down when I was done and being depressed that it was over. It was that good of a read. I think if more people read it, they would understand it. But, you know, in this society, reading something called Autobiography of a Yogi doesn't exactly sound like something you'd want to do.
It's a big book, too.
To be honest, I think The Course in Miracles is not a title of a book that I would want to sit down and read either.
It's also a big fat book. Not easy to get through.
Interesting, huh? Mm-hmm. But I think Autobiography of a Yogi is so lyrical, and that's one of the reasons why I entrained to it in the same way that Gary Renard's books, Disappearance of the Universe, did as well.
The Yogananda stuff, he started lessons to help undo the mind and the ego. And yeah, there's just so many parallels between it.
Well, I think even the Course says the Course isn't the only way to God. It's not the only way to enlightenment. I think Yogananda did know what he was doing. He didn't need the Course to do it. But it's also kind of like a cautionary tale that if people are kind of rigid with the Course and they think it's the only way, it's not necessarily true. Yeah. I think there's many ways to get back to God. The Course, I think, is a really good one. The thing I like about the Course is it kind of lays it out for you in a way that you don't have to think too much about. But Yogananda had it. He had it in 1920 or whenever.
I want to give a shout out to Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. She has it in an audiobook version, which I've devoured. I think I'm on my third or fourth listening now.
Oh, you loved it that much.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Anyone, I mean, it's all about creativity and getting a permission slip and just how ideas float around to person, waiting for the person to bring it through. And there is some magic in that, but there's also a lot of spirit in it, too. She's very grounded in her spiritual.
This is Elizabeth Gilbert, who wrote Love,
Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love, right. Mm-hmm. Same author. Yeah, we've heard her on the Pete Holmes
podcast.
Pete Holmes, the comedian, who also is very much aware of the Course in Miracles. So again, Pete Holmes, You Made It Weird podcast. He actually had Elizabeth Gilbert on as a guest. He has quite a few, actually, spiritual people, along with a lot of comedians and stuff. It's a nice mix. Mm-hmm. But with Elizabeth Gilbert, one of the reasons why I love that episode with Pete Holmes is she really hit home with some of this stuff. Like, let your parents deal with their own stuff. Don't get too involved. Stay away from all that. They are who they are. They're mature people. She talks common sense, but she also understands how to somehow reach your source, your center. And she's able to explain it in a much better way than I am right now on how to get there.
Yeah, I think sometimes we do have to trick our ego and whatever.
Just to calm it down,
Yeah. The fear part is sometimes okay, because sometimes fear is okay to let us know something dangerous is about to happen. But when you're about to be creative and invent something, fear isn't necessary. So it's kind of reminding fear, like, okay, you know, let me know when some guy's about to jump me from behind, but not necessarily when I'm about to sit down and write a script.
Exactly.
Fear is not necessary there.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's nice to have those kind of reminders. Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert, Creative Living Beyond Fear.
I highly recommend that audiobook. It's a little pricey. I think it's $20.
Yeah.
But it's really worth it.
If $20 is going to get me to a different place, a higher place, then I'm all for it. So I do want to shout out to a couple people, kind of like a New Year's Eve thank you, and that's to the Disappearance of the Universe Yahoo discussion group. Thank you so much, Marcy and Aussie, and those moderators on that email discussion group. You guys have been great and have been really, really helpful to me. Hopefully one day we can meet you in person.
We also have a new listener from Canada. His name is Dave Burke.
Oh, Dave. Welcome, Dave Burke.
Yes. We welcome all of our listeners. Thank you for tuning into our Facebook page. So we're slowly climbing one by one.
One by one. One very special one by one, which is totally great.
Because we're all one.
To all of our listeners, thank you so much for being there with us. 2016 is going to be an amazing year. And I hope that we can take it one day at a time and get our egos to quiet down and get our minds trained to God.
Peace to my mind. Let all my thoughts be still.
I couldn't have said that better myself. Thank you very much, listeners. We will be back in a couple weeks for The Course, episode 43.